friends, it's us. I am Steph Beagle.
And I am Lauren Abney.
And this is Well Behaved. We believe balance is a bit overplayed and way overrated. We've embraced finding our perfect blend of wellness with a twist of tequila.
This podcast delivers wellness remixed from face-slapping facials to the ABCs of CBD. Living your best life and finding what's right for you is what it's all about. Let's do this.
That's the goal, is to open people up, to help them gain clarity, to maybe be open to things they weren't necessarily thinking about or willing to think about in a way that's really grounded, but also really spiritual.
Well, I know. That's amazing. Our guest today is Dr. Amy Robbins, doctor of clinical psychology. She's a wellness speaker, and she is the host of Life, Death, and the Space Between podcast. We love the podcast, and what it looks at is life, death, consciousness, and ultimately what it all means. It serves as a way for people to open their mind and hopefully their souls to live a more connected life. Well, we're grateful, and we've been very open to meeting you because from the very beginning of this podcast, people have been saying that we need to be connected. So today is fortuitous or serendipitous, and we're supposed to be together. We're going to make it through our tech issues because we're in 2020 and this is what life is these days. So thank you for being patient. Thank you for being with us. And we're so excited just for all of the knowledge and experience that you have in this realm, because it affects everybody. This is not, life and death is something that we are all living and we are all dying. So thank you. And while we're in this life, I think it'd be interesting to hear what you consider to be your own definition of wellness.
I think for me, wellness means, you know, as a therapist, means really knowing yourself. So there's a lot of wellness out there right now, right? Wellness is a really hot word, yoga, meditation, nutrition, you know, all of those pieces. But I think when we don't know ourselves intimately, we can't be well. And so the therapist in me is always about knowing yourself, knowing your thoughts, understanding them, going deeper. And I think that ultimately that is what helps you live a really fulfilling, meaningful life.
No one's ever answered that way. So we appreciate, everyone always is like going to the spa, which is totally great because we love going to the spa or getting a massage. But it is so interesting. We talk a lot about the personalized journey of wellness and doing what's right for you. But the only way to do what's right for you is to know what you need, right? So totally aligned.
Well, and I warned you guys, right? When we first talked, I was like, how deep do you want me to go? Because I could go real deep, real fast. And you were like, we're in.
We're so in.
This is what you got.
I'm 100% in. And I think where we want to start is actually to dive in. And I want you to explain to us what your connection is with the ideas of life, death, and that space between, where that consciousness comes from, and why do you feel like if people understand that, they can live a fuller life?
So my journey started when I was born, but really started, you know, where I sort of probably started before I was born, if we're really going to get to the nitty-gritty here. But where I sort of think about like the turning point in my life for me was when I was 18 years old, and my aunt, who was like a mother to me, my family is extremely close, she had juvenile onset diabetes, and she was going in for a kidney she was on the list for a kidney and pancreas transplant. And the only way she could get the transplant was if her heart was strong enough. And when they were doing all of these tests, they realized that her heart was not strong enough to withstand the transplant. They went in to do surgery and she died on the table. I was a freshman in college, you know, got the call. We all have those moments that are like seared in our memory when they're that traumatic for us. I remember exactly where I was, what I was doing. And it really kind of catapulted me on this journey, which I would have thought would have been really about grief and figuring out how to manage when someone really close to you dies. I mean, it was really, I had lost great grandparents, not even grandparents at the time. And so what ended up happening was that over the course of a couple of years, she started to come to me. And at that point, I was in grad school for psychology. I had sort of had a really, really, really brief career in radio advertising. But her death really shook me up in a lot of ways. And it sent me into therapy, which then led to me wanting to become a psychologist. And during my, I think it was my first or second year, very early on in my training, my cousin, her son was getting married. And she came to me in what I now know is called an after-death communication. Sometimes people call them visits. At the time, I thought it was a dream because I didn't know that there was actually language for all of these experiences that were out there. And in that visit, she very clearly communicated some things to me that were accurate. She told me to tell my mom. I had a vision of her standing at my kitchen sink in the house that I grew up in. My mom was crying. She said to me, tell your mom it's okay. I'm going to be at the wedding. She doesn't have to be upset that I'm not going to be there. When I called my mom the next morning and told her this, my mom started crying again, saying I was standing at my kitchen sink last night crying, talking to her, saying, I want you to be there. I can't believe you're not going to be there. And there were other things that happened as well that I shared with other loved ones that were accurate. And then as I lost more loved ones, grandparents and things like that, it started happening more frequently. It started happening with patients and their loved ones who were starting to make their way in. And then I had to figure out what to do. And so to me, that space between is really significant of all of this. It's the significance of like the space between life and death. It's the space between death and what happens after we die. It's the space between psychology and spirituality. I mean, there's or not like the merger between really. So it means so many of these things.
Wow. I got a lot of chills when you were telling that story. You are a clinical psychologist, and do you include then also mediumship with your work with your patients, or have you left that to be more something you work on personally and within the podcast?
I think now it's more organic. So I did what I called my medium internship. I worked with a medium for a couple years, learning from her, and then I had people come to me and I did readings for them for a couple of months and then really pivoted and realized that wasn't necessarily the work that I wanted to be doing. It didn't feel like, it didn't feel aligned with who I was. And so it's really important to me to always be paying attention to that, because if it feels like it's so, if it feels like you're pushing something, it's probably not the right thing. And so I then started, frankly, the podcast.
We love mediums. We've had a medium on the podcast. We've spent a lot of time ourselves having sessions and trying to understand, you know, getting messages not only from previous and past loved ones, but also our guides. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you see people tuning in their intuition so that they're able to receive these messages while they're in this lifetime?
Well, I think that, you know, a big place to start is clearing out a lot of the gunk. Like if you are really in your mind all the time, you're not going to have the space to connect, because the way to connect is to be out of your own mind. So I don't know if other mediums have probably been on and talked about the different clairs, but for me, there's clear cognizance, which is this clear knowing. And so the way that I describe it is it feels like you get information that feels outside of yourself, but you just know in the moment that that is the exact right thing to do. And sometimes this doesn't need to be super difficult. Like the shower happens to be a great place for that to happen, right? We're not distracted. We don't have our phones nearby. I mean, meditation is great too, but for me, you know, before we got on, I was getting ready. And I always just throw out the question, like, can you help me understand what I need to do for this? And then I just wait, you know, I don't expect anything. I don't say, well, it needs to look like this, you know, I need to do this. It's just very general. Like, can you please guide me in this? And then I wait and I listen. And it happens pretty quick. Like, it's within seconds that I'm like, okay, great, I know. And then I just go with that. I don't question it. I don't second guess it. And that's how you know when you're really connected to your soul, is there isn't that mind piece that's always questioning and guessing. It really feels like it's outside of yourself. It's your heart. It's this knowing experience of truth.
You had it come through in a really powerful way, right? And I love that you just said in the shower, just to ask the question out loud, what are the other like small tangibles that our friends who maybe don't fully believe that they, you know, can speak to their spirit guides or their past loved ones, what can people do to tap into their intuition or to clear space in that way outside of being in the shower naked and asking the question, right?
Yeah, I know. I like to either take a shower or cry.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, and people are always like, I had a friend ask me, she's like, can they see me naked when I'm in there?
I like, think about that all the time.
I actually don't. Yeah. Is that weird?
I definitely think about that.
No.
Do you have an answer?
I do. I'm not sure if it's a right answer, but this is my answer, which is that I think what makes these concepts really difficult for people to understand is that we try to think about it as if we are a human body, right? And so we're thinking of them as a human figure looking with eyes down on us. And it's not, it's just energy. Mm. And so when we think about energy, there's always energy in spaces, right? And that's all this is that it's just energy. So they're not like looking with eyes at you naked in the shower.
That's good. I mean, I wouldn't mind if they looked at me naked in the shower, but now that I know that they're not.
You know what I've done is I think the way that you can invite a spirit in, I've also not invited a spirit in. So there's like actually one person that I think of that I really don't feel like I'm ready to connect with them yet. And I've said in my head, like to their consciousness of like, please don't visit me right now. I actually don't want to close my eyes and like go to where we probably would need to go. And so the same way in the shower, I'm like, please don't look at me right now in the shower.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, asking in the shower, obviously meditation, right? Like that's the one that's always, people are always talking about meditate, 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 but there are different ways to meditate. And I want to say like in this time when people are really anxious, right? We're recording during COVID. It's an anxious time. People are finding it really hard to just sit quietly in meditation. And I get that because when your mind, it's like this cycle of like when your mind is racing, you want to calm it down. But if your mind's racing, it's really hard to calm it down. So it's not always great to try to do that in that space. But you can take a walk. You can be in nature. You can sit at a beach and watch the waves. You can sit in a forest and watch the trees. Like there are lots, you can sit outside and look at the stars. There are lots of ways to meditate that aren't sitting, you know, in the cross-legged position, just either listening to a guided meditation or just sort of sitting there waiting for information to come in. So all of those are good ways to connect. And I think therapy, you know, to get rid of, to clear out space is a great way too. Like I'm not pushing, you know, therapy, but I think I'm a huge proponent of it. I am pushing therapy. I'm a huge proponent of therapy. Yeah.
You're like, I'm not pushing it, but like fucking go.
Yeah, right, exactly. But go to therapy. Because it does allow you to clear that space. And I think for me, so much of my work and probably what allowed me to be open was that I had grieved and was grieving in therapy, my aunt. And what that meant to me and what her life meant and the connections that I had made about her life and my life. And so I moved some of that aside, which then opened up the space for her to come through and communicate.
Right. No, it's so interesting. Okay. So something else that you, there were so many things that you said in our first like best friendship meeting that we just like, Lauren and I looked at each other after and we're like, what just happened? Like we need more Amy. So one thing that you brought up was the life review. Can you tell our friends what that is and what we've learned from those that have experienced a life review? Because I thought this was like so fucking awesome.
Mind-blowing, right? Yeah. This is like a mind-blowing concept.
Let's blow some minds.
So So a life review is, a lot of it comes out of the near-death experience researchers who, so people who've had near-death experiences are people who have basically, who have physically died and come back to tell us, they don't die, they do and they don't, they do, right. And then they come back and tell us about what happened when they died. So they didn't, they were dead, I'm like stumbling over myself. Yeah, no. They were dead for a period of time as determined by a medical doctor. And then they come back and they've shared with us what happened. And there are hundreds of thousands of people who have had these experiences. There's a whole organization called it's called IANS, the International Association for Near-Death Studies, which just has tons of members who all talk about this experience. And so the life review is how I think of it, is sort of a movie of your life that happens like in the moment of death. And I think that when we think about time, we think about time in a very linear fashion, like this is going to take a while. Time on the other side is not linear. It's like instantaneous in a lot of ways. And so this life review includes your thoughts, words, and actions that you had on yourself and others. So you experience, this is the part that's so amazing to me, is you experience each of these things from the perspective of the other person. So you literally know what it was like to walk in their shoes in relation to you. So what do we do with that, right? I mean, when we talk about do unto others, I think that that's kind of the cardinal rule. And this is, and we know, like, you're going to get it. You're going to feel it. You're going to know it. And I really try to use this in my everyday life to inform me, like, if this was my last moment, am I happy with how I spoke to my loved ones today? Did I tell people I loved them? Was I kind to my kids? Now, I want to also say I'm not perfect. I yell at my kids. I get mad at my husband. Sometimes I get very angry and want to punch people in the face. Like, all of those things are very real human emotions. But at the end of the day, when I reflect on either the end of the day or moment to moment, it's like, did I behave and comport myself in a way that if I had a life review, like I walked off the curb and got hit by a truck, if my life review happened now, would I be proud of that life? And I think that can really guide us.
It's wildly interesting to think about. I think the questions we often ask ourselves are like, or maybe this is just me, like, am I successful? Right? Like, am I loved? I mean,
am I obscurely the term happy?
Am I happy? Like, what's wrong with me? You know, like, so many of the questions I feel like that we ask ourselves aren't, you know, am I doing today? Am I where I'm supposed to be? Right? Am I treating people the way that I would want to be treated? Right? Like, they sound.
Am I proud of myself in the way that other people?
Totally. And I like the idea too of what you said about moment to moment. Like, you know, is it on your birthday or at the end of the year that you're like, what did I achieve this year? Like, I think rewiring the questions that we ask ourselves to have them be, I don't want to say smaller, but have them be more present and more in the moment and more, yeah, self-reflective and connected to just being the person that you want to be, I think is like super powerful.
I think this shows you living the person that you want to be, not just deciding who you want people to see you as, but each interaction, you're making the decision to be within the character and the ethos that you want to project and that you really think that you are holistically. So you're making a decision every single time you interact with somebody and not just on the big things.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Well, and I think what you're really talking about here is, are you operating from a place of soul or a place of ego? And when you're operating from your soul, you're asking those questions of am I operating with integrity, authenticity, kindness, love? Again, very hard to do 100% of the time. That's not, it's not how I roll, and I don't expect anybody else to roll like that. But I think when you are asking those questions and when you're saying, am I successful? It's like, okay, let's break that down. What does success mean? You know, how are you defining that? If this is the end, if you are at your eulogy, if you are at your life review, what does success mean to you? And that's going to be different on some level for all of us. But I also think there is a collective kind of higher view of what it means to be an evolving soul.
Right. No, I think it's so cliche where, you know, you hear that, like, live every day like it's your last, you know. But I think what I admire about you is, you know, death is such this topic that no one wants to talk about, right? And I think you want to say live each moment like it's your last, and like you never know what tomorrow will bring. And honestly, it's so fucking true. I mean, it to all of us, we've all had experiences where we in that moment are reminded that life is short and like you need to live to the fullest. But I think what you talk a lot about is living with purpose and acknowledging death to help you redefine and help you re-understand like how you can live in a more present, purposeful, like today. And like that I love, you know, I think talking about death in that way of the life review, or would you be proud if this was the end of who you are, the way you treat people and what you're doing? Like that isn't scary. That's like enlightening.
Well, and I think I want to just shift something because I do channel. I don't like to call it channeling, but that's virtually what it is. But once a week when I connect, I do a little piece that I include in my newsletter where I connect with, I say, my soul wisdom. And one of the things that came through last week was around this notion of purpose. And I think when we're looking at purpose, we're thinking more, again, about ego. And what came through when I was sitting in my meditation / channeling, but like I have issues with calling things certain things. So what comes through is really essence. So purpose to me is ego, and essence is soul. Mm. So are you expressing the essence of who you are in your interactions, in your life, in your being, versus am I living my purpose? Because if you are working from your essence, you will live your purpose.
Holy shit.
Fuck yeah.
I don't think I've ever used the word essence in my life, but now that just talked to my soul.
Good. This is breaking news, by the way.
Like, breaking news.
Haven't really used it before. Mm-hmm. Just came in my newsletter two newsletters ago. And I'm like, for me, I was like, oh my God, this is a colossal shift. I'm going to start talking about it in that way.
Wow. Well, we're really grateful that you channeled that information for us because you channeled it. But I think to me, that's so interesting because I truly believe that to understand what your essence is, you have to know yourself. And as we talked about at the very beginning, so many people are clouded in terms of the information and true all knowing of themselves because the conversation is comparison, it is distracted, it is ingrained in behavior and how we were brought up. And so all of this now ties together because you have to have clarity to know who you are, to know what your essence is, and then to be able to test yourself and make sure that you're living within that truly.
Yep, exactly.
Wow.
Essence.
Diagnosis.
Yep, love it.
That was amazing. So I just finished reading Many Lives, Many Matter. Wait, when Many Lives, Many Masters. Mm. Super into it. It's like
he's the gateway. He's the gateway drug.
It is because it's the easiest book. It's like 150 pages and it's written by, is he a psychologist?
He's a psychiatrist, actually. Mm-hmm. I believe he was trained at Yale, mm-hmm. Brian Weiss. And he is the guru, the guide of past life regression work.
And, you know, I think he had his first experience and it opened him up to what previously was data and clinical and chemistry. And he had a patient that was able to regress into her previous lives, and she had like 100 of them and they were wild. And through hypnosis, she was able to share. She didn't even remember a lot of what she was sharing. But so to me, that was a demonstration. That was evidence of how our souls carry on throughout multiple generations of lifetime. So do you believe that that is what happens
And can you just explain to us more about the soul's contract?
Yeah, so I do believe that souls live on and reincarnate. And I think that's kind of the premise of a lot of the work that I do, not necessarily clinically, definitely not clinically, but certainly in how I talk and how I think about things, is this notion of the soul continuing to grow over lifetimes. And so a soul contract or soul agreement, they're sometimes called, are contracts we make with our guides or the other side before we come to this physical plane. And typically how we know what those contracts are is that they are things that keep showing up for us repeatedly in our lives. So some people will call them lessons, you know, that can, if we struggle in relationships or we struggle with money or we find ourselves with difficulty setting boundaries, those are contracts that we set up before we come here as things that we needed to learn to grow our soul. Mm-hmm. And so when we can learn those things, and rather than see them as obstacles, but rather opportunities, then we can really start to open up and truly move towards this greater connection, because you're no longer, you don't see all these things as stumbling blocks, and you don't see yourself as a victim anymore. So you're moving out of that victim space into a space of opportunity to learn and grow.
So do some people get their soul contract or start to understand it and then think, shit, I got the short end of the stick. Like, this is a shitty lesson to have to learn.
Yeah. I mean, I think all the time, right? Like, I mean, for me, I'm always like, please, please, I hope I did not negotiate the loss of a child in my soul contract. Like, that to me seems like a lesson that I don't know how I would handle that type of pain. I know I would, but I don't know how. But, you know, let me give you an example of this. So I remember early on in my life, you know, feeling I've been with my husband for a long time. We met when we were 18, 19 years old in college, and remember feeling like that desperate feeling of like, oh my God, what would I ever do if he leaves me? How would I survive? You know, what would that mean? And I wasn't just thinking about death at that time. It was just like, what if he breaks up with me? Right. Mm-hmm. And so I will never forget the moment where I thought to myself, if something happened to him, I know I would be okay. And that was like a pivotal shift where I believe that whatever contract I had come with around what it meant to be with someone or what it meant to be my own person or what it meant to be in relation to someone and how that relationship did not need to feel like a desperate clinging, but rather a partnership. Once I got to a space where I was like, I'll be okay no matter what happens to him, a whole shift occurred, right? Mm-hmm. That to me was an example of a soul contract and how I finally understood and got it so that I could let that contract go.
When you said, like, when I got to that place, it's like, how do you know you got, you know, like, is it a feeling? Is it like you know, you woke up one day and you were like, I'll be okay, right? Like, how do you tap into the knowing or, you know, I'm trying to also bring it into my life and think about if I've had 100%. Any of those moments. Yeah.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, again, it goes back to that clear cognizance of you just know, like and I think also because it still stands out to me in such a profound way, right? Like this was like a little blip in the course of my life. But when those blips stand out to you so profoundly, sort of like the same thing with the after death communication versus a dream, like they feel there's a very different essence. There's a very different feeling to them. And so you just start to be able to identify the different energies that they bring, right? One might feel more force where one feels more natural, comfortable, clear. And when we're forcing energies, it's likely not that knowing. It's not that cognizance. It's not that soul. It's much more ego driven.
That makes
when
sense.
We're in that soul space, it's just ease. People call it flow.
If people want to learn more, I mean, I don't even know about the space between, about, you know, living in your essence, but thinking about death. Are there any books or any, I don't know, tools? I think it's such an interesting topic that I don't know if people really know where to even start. And I think in a more approachable way, like you humanize it in such an approachable way. So I'll stop there and ask the question and let you answer.
Sure. So I think Brian Weiss's book is always like the greatest entry point. It's really an easy read. It was the first book I ever read on this. I think not to plug my podcast, but my podcast episodes are also a good way to start to introduce some of these concepts. So Dr. Robert Schwartz, I interview him. He also has two books, Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift, which both talk about soul contracts. Michael Newton, who wrote The Journey, I mean, he's got like 100 books, but The Journey of Souls is one of his first books that talks about these concepts. I'm trying to think what other. I'm going to look here because I have so many of them typically around. Oh, Edgar Cayce is one of the first mediums really early on. So a lot of his stuff is great.
So I think that's more than enough. I think we gave our friends
enough
homework.
That's a mini library for our friends that are starting with zero.
Okay.
But
yeah, and I can always add more.
Yeah, we can share some in the show notes. And I'd encourage people to read Many Lives, Many Masters. It was just so interesting to me. And it comes from this place of simplicity, right? It's just like easy storytelling. It is not at all verbose. And it's coming from somebody who wasn't a believer. So I think that lens is interesting as people are just starting to learn.
Well, and it comes from a place of curiosity, right? And I think that when you're doing this, when you're in this world, that's all that I encourage people to do is just be curious. Just be curious and open and see what happens.
Do you have a response for how people can help with their own fear of death? Because I feel like people they limit themselves because of this like constant fear of death.
Well, I think with death, I always ask the questions or think about the questions. Are you afraid of like the dying process? Are you afraid of not being here anymore? Are you afraid of losing someone and the pain? Because these are all different pieces of it, right? Like some people are really afraid to die. Some people are really afraid of the pain of losing someone they love. And so I think that, again, you know, when you look at it from a therapeutic perspective, one of the things that we do in therapy that's really effective when people have kind of these acute fears is to face them head on. So what is your exposure to them? You know, how much do you just talk about death and dying? You know, have you ever been around people who have died? What has that experience been? You know, most people's experiences are typically, if they have lost a loved one, that's not like a out of order death, you know, it's a grandparent or someone mm-hmm. who maybe they had a tragic death of someone that they, you know, knew in high school or college or a child, you know, a childhood friend, but they've never really looked at the dying process, both from a spiritual and physical perspective. So what happens to our physical body, but also what happens to our spiritual body. And I think just, you know, starting to be curious about that is important. You know, what happens when we die? If you've ever been around someone who's dying, it's actually quite a beautiful process. And we do a lot around birth, and we just ignore that little thing called death that happens like at the end. But it's a very, very sacred experience. And when you've been with people who are moving through that and their loved ones, it can be quite beautiful and not at all scary. And we've made it scary because we've made it something that happens somewhere else, usually in a hospital with lots of machines, and we don't want to know about it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of work happening right now around death. There's a lot of end of life stuff. There's death doulas, you know, people who are really talking about the dying process in a way that makes it not so scary. Like, I'm not afraid to die. I'm afraid to not live. I'm afraid to, you know, miss out, but I'm not afraid of that dying process. Or I'm actually kind of super curious. Like, I want to go over there. I want to experience that again.
Yeah. I always wondered, I'm not afraid of death either. I actually think about everybody else, you know, cause death leaves people with so much heaviness, and
oftentimes questions and sadness. But I'm a Scorpio, so I thought I was just like a little bit morbid and totally kosher with death in general. But I think it makes you make a great point in that we make it seem scary. And we have now a culture and a society that puts it into this, you know, very health care hospital type situation when, and really we're all on our way to death regardless. And if we just live a full life, we can be quite proud of what we had and be grateful of living in our essence.
Well, and if we think about where we are in this space and time, right? I mean, let's really talk about what we're talking about here. We've got COVID, but COVID is really about death.
Right.
And that's not to minimize it.
No.
Right? Like there, I don't want to minimize how painful it is to lose someone you love. It is excruciatingly painful as a human being to lose someone you love. It is changes your life. It changes everything. It will shift who you are, how you are in this world. It will change you. But that's okay.
It's so fitting that we're going to end on death. No, I'm kidding. we appreciate you. And I think, you know, we love going deep. And I think we're continuing to just, we know that we're a work in progress. But I think one thing we can rally around for sure is this idea that I know Lauren and I both, like, we are so concentrated on living, right? And it's not that we're scared of death, but it's, I don't want to miss out. And I don't want to miss the moments of, you know, living the life that we're living now. And I do want to be the person that I know I want to be today. So I think that's super special. And I'm likely going to think a lot about that in the shower later today and tomorrow when I take another shower.
Yep.
But
when you get back to me, let me know.
Yeah, I'll definitely get back to you. Now I'm going to like think of you when I'm naked. So I don't know if that's weird or not, but here we are. But we honestly, we appreciate you. And you have like, there's a magic and ease to you that I know that we just want more of. So
yes, I'd encourage everyone to take some listens to Life, Death, and the Space Between podcasts. There, you've had some really special guests on there and people are sharing miraculous stories. So go listen, read a book, like listen to a meditation, find ways where if you have one little bit of interest in this topic, just pay attention. I think it, there is no doubt that if you are tuned in at least 5%, you'll start getting more signs and more, that intuition will really take hold. So thank you for guiding our friends. Thank you for being with us today. You're amazing.
Thank you.
This was so fun. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Friends, this has been fun. Thanks for spending some quality time with us. If you need more of us in your life, we totally get it. Follow us on Instagram at WellBehave Podcast.
Also, we aren't selfish. Tell us what you need and want to learn more about by sending us a note at wellbehavepodcast@gmail.com or slide into our DMs. We prefer that anyway. Until next time, stay well and somewhat behaved.